Hi everyone, welcome to the sixth episode of The Players Lounge, the tennis podcast that focuses on the mental aspect of the game. My name is Jennifer Megan. I am a former professional tennis player and I created this podcast because I wanted to have a space in which tennis players could find some tools and concrete solutions in order to improve their mental toughness so they could reach their full potential. I haven't published an episode in a while because, to be honest, I was struggling a bit to find a topic that I found relevant enough, and my intent is really to bring value, and I just didn't want to create content for the sake of creating content. So it took me a bit of thinking, and I decided to talk about a topic that I think is often discussed, but not really. And this is talent. I want to talk about talent today. And when I started to do my research for this episode, I searched sports and talent, and I could not really find something that I found extremely valuable. There was a bunch of thesis and but nothing that I thought could really apply. And then I went to look for tennis and talent, and there was not many things. What I did find was a lot of articles and videos and blog discussions on who's the most talented player of all time, because in the tennis community we love to talk about who's the most talented tennis player. We love to debate about this topic. And when you look around, you always tend to find the same names popping up. If you take all the eras, you always find John McEnroe, Marat Safin, Martin Hingis, Monica Seles, Marcelo Rios, and the list goes on. I could not name all of them because that's not the point of today's episode. But there is one name that 98% of tennis lovers agree on when it comes to tennis and talent, and this is Roger Federer. I mean, I think that there is not much debate about it, and people praise how he makes tennis look effortless, and all the shots and what he's capable of doing, and at his age. And I mean, we could talk about Federer talent for forever. But actually, if you ask me, I think that the whole talent conversation is absolutely irrelevant. If you want me to go even further, I believe that talent is a myth, even for Roger Federer. And the reason why I believe this is because when you start to dig into, you do research on talent, you see that it's defined as a natural aptitude or skill to do something. And when it's applied, especially to tennis or even sport in general, when we use the word talented, what bothers me is that it's kind of a code for some people have it and some people don't. And it's kind of the excuse for not putting the work. And collectively, because we're all in this together. And I think that sometimes we love the talented players because we can hide behind the fact that they were born this way. And that, you know, even if I work hard, I will never have this type of talent. So it's okay for me to kind of slack off. I mean, that's why I'm cautious when it comes to talent. And I don't like to use this word because it's the perfect way to say, okay, he's talented, so that means that he was kind of, I don't know, graced and blessed by the universe, and he or she has something that I could never have. And I see this especially in junior tennis. We love to talk about talents, and I'm not sure why. And I think that it actually has a negative impact, especially on young players. And I will explain why. When you tell a young player that, oh, you're talented, oh my gosh, and you're praising them for that, even if it's not your intention, subconsciously you imply that he or she might not have to work so hard to make it. So if you are a player and you're being told that you're talented and you kind of think that that will be enough to make it to the top, especially in the era we live in which we all tend to believe in the so-called overnight success, which I also believe is a complete myth, and it's like kind of this culture of like, oh, you can just like post something and you will become instantly famous, is again negative because the reality is different. Think again, because this is not the truth. If you are a coach and that you love talking about and you're looking for talented players and you love to talk about talented players to parents or other coaches, my advice to you is to change career because you are just selling an illusion. Now, if you're a parent listening to this, and that you see that your kid is what they like to talk talented, they like to call talented, and you already see yourself in his box during a Grand Slam final, time to get a reality check because this is not the right way to go. And the reason why I'm really emphasizing on the negative aspect of praising talent and why I really believe that the word talent should never be brought into the conversation when we talk about building young tennis players is because it puts also a very high level of expectations on the player. When people are praising players and saying, oh my gosh, you're so talented. Because of this talent, you have the talent of a future number one in the world. We love to say that. We love to say this thing, oh, I haven't seen such talent since, and we throw names of amazing tennis players. It creates an expectation in the mind of the player. And what we don't often realize is that if this player doesn't make it, the level of disappointment will be so much higher than a regular player who has not been praised for his or her talent, but has been working hard. And as educators, educators and parents, I think the main role that we have is to make sure that not only we are developing good tennis players, but that we also de helping those players to become balanced individuals. So please be careful with your use of the word talent because it can really have kind of boomerang effect on your player or on your kid, and next time someone start to be and all excited and hyped up about some talent, I mean, just be a bit more suspicious because a lot of times, they're just talking without really knowing what they are talking about, and you will see a lot of people like that in the tennis world, unfortunately. I mean, not just in tennis world, but in general. And the reason why I talked about like the parents and the coaches is because I truly believe that they play a major role in this. I actually discussed that. I dedicated the full episode on tennis parents that you can listen to if you haven't already. And I believe that the role of parents is to team up with the coach and vice versa. I mean, the coaches also need to make sure that they have a good relationship with the parents, because you don't want to put your player or your kid in a position in which they have to choose between the parents or the coach. It's not good. You want to make sure that everyone is on the same how do you say? I'm losing my English. On the same phase, same wavelength. Thank God I'm getting it. On the same wavelength in order to build and to help the kid to get to his or her full potential. Talking about parents, because when it comes to Roger Federer, I think that his biggest talent, I mean, apart from being a coordination master and all the things that he can do, being a complete wizard with the racket, is that, to me, what I'm impressed the most about his career is his ability to be surrounded by the best people for him. I think that, to me, when I look at Roger Federer's career, I think that he's the best preserved potential of the whole history of tennis, because he had all the reasons to fall into the trap of wasted talent. I think everyone knows that, but for a long time, I mean, Federer was what we could have, you know, he said himself, like, he had a temper on the court and he was struggling managing his emotions, and this could have been a complete disaster for his career. And a lot of times his emotions were getting the best of him. And I think we don't give enough credit to his parents, but they played a major role in putting the good values in his mind and to raising him to make sure that he became a decent human being, a good human being. And I talked about this in an episode in which, when he was playing with his dad and he was not being well, and his dad had enough and he just left him. He gave him money and he said, look, if you don't want to change your attitude, you take that money and you find a way home. And it was 1 hour away. And Federer talked about how this was one of the things that helped him to start understanding that his actions had consequences. And he also discussed about how his mom had a big impact on him, and she was telling him that he could not behave this way, that he had to actually do better in order not to waste his potential. And when it comes to Federer and his amazing talent, I mean, there is someone that we cannot left out of the conversation, and someone that he talked about, like, many times, and that's Peter Carter. And Peter Carter was Federer's mentor when he was between the ages of, I think, 10 to 14, and then from 16 to 18, 19, when he was actually in that period, when 10 to 14, when the project of becoming a tennis player became more important. And then when he made a transition from the juniors to professional tennis. And in the first episode of the Players Lounge, I actually discuss how you have different stages in your career and how important it is to understand who you are, how you can define your identity, and how with your coach you can have different milestones and how you can really shape your tennis identity. So if you haven't listened to that episode, I mean, I think it's kind of a good way to learn how to shape your career. And I want to talk about Peter Carter more deeply, because he discussed that Federer discussed many times how he was actually more than a coach and more of a mentor to him, that he really helped him to become a better human being, to be more laid back, and how, yes, he was shaping his technique, but he was also he was caring very much about him, and how this had a huge impact on his career. And then I want to talk about someone else, someone that is probably the reason why Federer is still playing today. And that's Pierre Paganini, who's the physio and the physical trainer who's been working with Federer since he was 18 years old. So we're talking about 20 plus years, which is insane when you talk about sports. Like, it's incredible. And what's interesting with this person is that Federer describes him as someone. I mean, when you look at on internet, you see that he's very he doesn't really like to be on the scene. I think I've saw an interview back in, I'm not sure, a few years back, and he was saying that out of the, I don't know how many Grand Slam he won, but I think out of 16 maybe Grand Slam that Federer had won at the time, he went to see only one final, and it was French Open when he won in 2009. And one of the things with Paganini is that a trainer who was very passionate about his work and always looking for ways to make work entertaining. And one of the characteristics of Federer is that his love for the game. You can say that he's very enjoying himself out there, and having people who understand that very competent, that is important for him to always have fun while he's working hard, was also a key to his success. So having someone who will understand where you're going and was able to build and to design training in order to help you to reach your goal is also something very important. And then we can also talk about Peter Lundberg, sorry if I didn't say it right, who kind of joined the team of Peter Carter and Paganini when he was 19 or something, and we know he had huge success. I mean, the Swedish coach worked with so many good players. I mean, Marat Safin, Dimitrov, Marcelo Rios, and the list goes on. I mean, we don't need to question his ability as a coach. And he was saying that, it's interesting because he was saying that at the time, Federer was still a bit struggling to kind of being fully involved. And once again, his parents played a major role, because when he was 17, 18, which is a crucial moment because you're making the transition, they understood that he will need extra help to make it to the top. And they recommended him that he should see a sports psychologist. And for a couple of years, he worked with a sports psychologist in order to learn how to manage his emotion. Because when he came to tour, for those who remember, because now we see Federer being like super calm, but when he came to tour, he was this guy who could break rackets, and people were starting to question when he was like 20 years old, which is still pretty young, but they started to question whether he actually had the potential to be more than just a talent. And I think that one of the what actually made change and really made him work harder than ever was a tragedy. His mentor, Peter Carter, died in a car accident in 2002. So when he was like 21, actually a year before he won his first Grand Slam, and Federer like shared that recently. I mean, a couple of months ago, in a very emotional interview, and he said that at that moment he understood, like he kind of felt that he didn't want to be a wasted talent. And that tragedy was really like a turning point, and that at that moment he's starting to work harder than ever and to really put all his mind and soul into his training so he could reach his goal that he had since he was very young to be number one in the world. And he said again that at that time he was lucky to have the right people with him. And again, I think it's like when it comes to Federer, I think, and the notion of working hard, people are a bit deaf because they don't want to hear that, oh my gosh, but Federer like doesn't need to work and he's just like this genius. But he discussed that several times, that he actually had to roll up his sleeves and to do it. But also he plays with that. It's interesting because he plays with this kind of genius aura, but at the same time it's not his responsibility to convince people that you need to work hard. He said that countless times, that you need to work hard in order to succeed. But if people don't want to hear it and want to just picture him as this withered, so be it. What can he do? But I'm digressing here. So we talked about that. And I think after that moment, this tragedy that he felt with the death of Peter Carter, he was really on a roll. And from that moment, he was 22, 23 at the time, and he really took charge of his career. And what we saw, I mean, until now, is that he never had a wrong choice. He always chose people that could help him to achieve something. I mean, whether it was Tony Roche or Paul Anacon or Stefan Edberg, when you look at those people, you can tell that they were all designed in order to bring something different. And he was not afraid to change, even when he was winning. When he decided to stop with Tony Roche in 2007, it was a surprise for the Australian coach, because he was not expecting that, because he was being very successful. And all the additions of his team, I mean, are people who can bring something to him, or who are literally dedicated to help him to reach something. I mean, you look at now Ivan Ljubicic, people were skeptical about it because they were like, okay, why? But then we saw that at first, because the first season that he was there, he didn't do well, actually, in terms of results. And then we saw that he actually had a big impact in helping Federer to be more aggressive, especially on his back end. And we all remember this 2017 final against Nadal, how everyone was shocked because it seemed like he finally found the solution to be aggressive on Rafa's heavy spin. So it was quite interesting to see that. And then you have Séverin Luthi, who was that he knows from the Davis Cup in Switzerland, that is always there. It's kind of this silent character, but was like tremendously important in his success. And then, of course, there is one person that I left, that I saved for last, which I think is, after Peter Carter, is the most important person in Federer's career, and that's his wife, Mirka. And I mean, he said it several times, and I don't think he just say that to be cute and to be romantic, but I truly believe that they would not be Federer without Mirka. She is the architect of his success. He said that from the moment he met her and then they got together, he just never looked back and had huge success. And part of it is because she was a tennis player. So she understands the game. She understands what the sacrifices are. So he doesn't have to worry about making sure that his girlfriend or wife now is upset because he's on tour 40 weeks out of 40 to 45 weeks during the year. And she's the one who protects him. And I mean, it's not easy to come close to Federer. And I think a lot of times people were saying that, oh, she's mean, she's this. But I think that it's a huge asset to have someone who wasn't a professional athlete as well. She was top 100, top 80 in the world, who understand the sacrifices in your corner, because you don't have to do much explaining. So that is, to me, a huge success. And so the talent that he has to surround himself always with the right people is a huge thing, and to me is probably the reason why at almost 40 he's still playing, and not just like playing for fun, but he's playing and like kicking some ass. There is also something that I think is good, and is that he's doing amazingly, is that he has an ability to say no. And what I mean by that is that when Federer makes a decision, it's very sharp and it doesn't look back. What I mean by that is that, for instance, like I said, when he decided to stop with Tony Roche in 2007, he was winning, but he knew that he wanted something more. When he decided to, you know, to not play Davis Cup, even though sometimes people were not happy about it because they felt like, okay, he was being selfish, he knew that in order to perform and to be the best he could be, he had to sacrifice something, and it was Davis Cup. But then when he decided to get involved fully, I mean, they went, and with the help of Wawrinka, who's been the backbone of the Swiss Davis Cup team for many years, they won it. And 2016 was the first time he had a real surgery on his knees, and he understood that by doing that, he will maybe not be number one, and he had to kind of give up that. But he was able to adjust and to make a solution and to decide that, okay, well, right now I will take care of my body and I will play less. That means that I might not be able to compete for the number one spot, but when I will be playing, I will be competitive. I'm going for the Grand Slams now. And then the way that he's able to not play the clay season, to the great despair of the French fans, and everyone who loves to see him at Roland Garros, but he understands that his chances to win Roland Garros now are very slim, and that it's better that he prepares himself for the grass season where we saw is still very much competitive. And so that's what I will say for Federer. And I think that what you can learn from that is that as a tennis player, you need to learn how to surround yourself, I think, with the right people. I was recently listening to an interview of Marat Safin, and he was saying that players actually know better. And what he meant by that was that inside you know what you need. And even at a young age, you know, at the young age, maybe not. And that's why the parents are very important, because they can actually scan the people for you and teach you how to recognize. But as you grow older, you know what you need and the way you need to choose your team is by being around people who share the same values. And I know like some coaches will say, oh, but no, like players don't know. And I know, but just put your ego on the side for a second and understand that at the end of the day, the player is the engine. And for tennis players, what you can really learn from Federer is that you have to, when you have potential, when you have what they like to call talent, you have a responsibility is to really protect it. And in order to protect it, it's by choosing the right persons to be around you. And for the parents, when your kid is young and that he or she has talent, is to learn to really choose people according to the values that they have, what they're standing for. Do they have interest for your kid, or they just want to ride and then to surf on the hype? And what is the long-term vision? You have to go for longevity, not for just like short-term goals. So again, when we look at Federer, this is what he did. He had an ambition. He had a goal. He was that very talented player. But I think his biggest talent, his biggest achievement was that he did not waste his potential. I think he can retire today and no one will say, oh, but he could have done more. He managed to protect his talent, his potential to the best of his ability, and he actually went even beyond. So that's it for today, guys. I hope this was helpful. This was the part one of Talent is a Myth. I will do another part two, and it will be basically like, how do you do when you are not as talented as a Federer? And then talent is actually much more than amazing technique and trick shots. So stay tuned, because I will give you plenty of tools that you can apply to your game. Thank you, and let's talk next time. Bye.